From Jakarta, here is the Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen our broadcast and online streaming voanews.id.
Hello listeners, welcome back to me Ahmad Faisal in English program. Hopefully you are so fine and still have spirit to listen our program today. And for these 60 minutes ahead, we would like to accompany you with various segments that can not only entertain you, but also educate as well as inform you our several beneficial information and entertainment such as news, commentary, and also other self-information, as well as Indonesian pop songs. Well, listeners, we begin our program with news. So stay tuned with us on Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world, at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id.
Listener, here's the news. First, the headlines. Minister Retno Marsudi highlights the importance of human resource development at the World Indonesian Congress. Indonesia urges OIC to stop violence in the Palestine-Israel conflict, and here's the news in detail. Indonesian Minister of Foreign Affairs Retno Marsudi underlined the importance of investing in human resource development to reach the target of Indonesia's Vision 2045. She conveyed this in her keynote speech at the opening of the 5th World Indonesian Congress, monitored from Jakarta on Thursday. Minister Retno Marsudi remarked that currently the landscape and changes in global trends continue to develop rapidly. She has also said to achieve Indonesia's Vision 2045, Indonesia requires the ability to adapt to disruptions and challenges, as well as the ability to see opportunities that arise.
Key to these endeavors include investing in human capital through high-quality education, developing robust economic foundation, quality governance, and effective democracy.
Moreover, Minister Retno further stated that to achieve Indonesia's Vision 2045, Indonesia continuously plays a major role in the global arena. She also conveyed that Indonesia has the advantage of cultural wealth, which plays a unifying role and is a soft diplomatic force. At the same time, Indonesia's strengths must be utilized to form strong diplomatic relations and to navigate an increasingly complex world. Indonesian Minister of Foreign Affairs Retno Marsudi has encouraged the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or OIC, to take concrete efforts to urge a ceasefire in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. In a statement received in Jakarta Wednesday, according to Minister Retno Marsudi, who attended OIC emergency meeting in Jeddah, the effort to stop violence as soon as possible is a priority that must be achieved immediately.
Mengingat Dewan Keamanan PBB belum mampu menjalankan fungsi.
Considering that the UN Security Council has not been able to carry out its functions, so to get stronger international support, the OIC must urge the UN to hold an emergency session. Moreover, Minister Retno also encouraged the OIC to ensure the smooth and safe delivery of humanitarian aid. According to her, the move to blockade access to electricity, water and fuel and punish civilians is contrary to the international law.
Setiap detik sangat berarti bagi warga Palestina yang terancam.
Every second is important for Palestinians whose basic rights are threatened. The OIC must urge all relevant parties to create humanitarian corridor in Gaza and ensure that international humanitarian law is respected. Every attempt to lead to expulsion of the population in Gaza must be rejected. Furthermore, Minister Retno Marsudi also hopes that the roots of the Palestinian and Israeli conflict can be resolved immediately. According to Minister Retno, eternal peace will never be achieved without the rights of Palestinian people being fulfilled. She also hopes OIC can urge the continuation of the peace process, namely by achieving a two-state solution. Indo-Pacific Plastics Innovation Network, or IPIN, held a demo day in Jakarta on Wednesday. According to Australian Ambassador to Indonesia Penny Williams at the event, Australia and Indonesia have not only maritime borders, but also a target to overcome plastic wastes.
So Australia and Indonesia have both got quite big targets for reducing plastic waste. Australia and Indonesia share one of the longest maritime boundaries in the world. So we also share the problem between us of plastic waste. As Ibu Amelia just reminded me that plastic doesn't have passports, it can just travel in the sea. So Australia and Indonesia are jointly committed to working together on this. This is the second year that we've done this kind of getting teams together to work through actually practical solutions. So it is it's a shared priority of the Australia and Indonesian governments, and we're so happy. Well, we're really pleased to involve people who've got ideas about actually what can you do to make practical change.
Moreover, Ambassador Penny has also conveyed that dealing with plastic waste cannot be carried out by one country, but it needs cooperation from all countries, particularly neighboring countries such as Indonesia and Australia. Indonesia and China have agreed to increase trade and investment cooperation. This was pointed out by Minister of Trade Zulkifli Hasan, as quoted by Antara on Wednesday. He delivered the remarks after accompanying President Joko Widodo to a meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping at the Great Hall of the People in Beijing, China. The minister said in a statement received on Wednesday, there was the signing of 10 investment collaborations in various fields, including defense, electric cars, energy security, and cooperation on village development and poverty alleviation. Indonesia's Deputy Minister of Trade, Jerry Sambuaga, has said business players must take advantage of the agreements that the government has reached to boost export value. So far, Indonesia has signed 38 international trade agreements with countries such as Japan, Pakistan, Chile, South Korea, Mozambique, Australia, Iran, and Malaysia. This was said by Jerry Sambuaga after opening the Trade Expo Indonesia at the Indonesia Convention Exhibition BSD on Wednesday, as reported by Antara. He also remarked that this was one of the notes for us all, especially business players, to take advantage of accesses that the government has strived for, especially bilateral processes. Besides the 38 agreements, another 15 agreements are being negotiated with several countries such as the European Union, Turkey, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Tunisia, Mauritius, Morocco, Canada, Peru, ASEAN, and Eurasia. Minister of Administrative and Bureaucratic Reform Abdullah Azwar Anas met Australian Minister for Government Services Bill Shorten to discuss efforts to digitize public services. In the meeting, both of them talked about practices of digitizing public services carried out in both countries. The Indonesian government gained insights from Australia's experiences and also outlined Indonesia's efforts to expedite the transformation of its public services. This was said by Minister Abdullah Azwar Anas in a written statement received in Jakarta on Wednesday, as quoted by Antara. Minister Anas also remarked that President Joko Widodo had placed the acceleration in the transformation of public services as one of his priorities. Indonesian government sought investment cooperation with countries in Asia-Africa region at the 61st Asian-African Legal Consultative Organization meeting in Nusa Dua, Bali. The government is committed to forming regulations in line with the needs of business owners. This was conveyed by Director General of General Legal Administration at the Ministry of Law and Human Rights, Cahyo R. Muzhar, on the sidelines of the meeting. As reported by Antara on Wednesday, he stated that to accommodate the needs of business owners, the Indonesian government cut bureaucratic regulations on 3,000 national regulations concerning investment in 2019. Indonesia's Manpower Ministry collaborated with the Australian government in vocational and work-based training through assistance in increasing workforce competency at the Serang Vocational and Productivity Training Center. This program is a form of collaboration between the two governments to develop vocational training centers at three places, including Medan, Serang, and Makassar. This was pointed out by the Indonesian Minister for Manpower, Ida Fauzia, in Serang on Wednesday. The inauguration of operations of the Maritime Job Training Center at the Serang Vocational and Productivity Training Center marked the completion of all construction activities for workshops, procurement of training equipment, and program development for two majors, including welding and electrical engineering. Listener, that was the news from Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Supporting the development of developing countries, the Indonesian government provides development grants which are distributed through the facilitation of Indonesian representatives in various regions in collaboration with the Indonesian Development Cooperation Fund Institute. One of these development grants was given to Namibia on Monday. Through the visit of the acting director of the Namibian Maritime and Fisheries Institute, NAMFI, Julia Manuel Ibuima, to the Indonesian Embassy in Windhoek, a grant agreement was signed from the Indonesian government to NAMFI in the form of capacity building, training of trainers, International Maritime Organizations IMO Model Course 609. Coordinator of the Information, Social and Cultural Function of the Indonesian Embassy in Windhoek, Ari Hadiman, welcomed the signing of the grant agreement. He remarked that the TOT IMO Model Course 609 training program will strengthen Namibia's human resources in the maritime sector and open up other cooperation opportunities in the maritime sector. Meanwhile, Director of the Namibian Maritime and Fisheries Institute, NAMFI, Julia Manuel, said that NAMFI would soon provide the full names of TOT training participants to take part in activities in Jakarta in November 2023. This was conveyed when she revealed the follow-up steps to implement the grant agreement. TOT IMO Model Curve 6.09 is a training aimed at the instructions in the maritime sector. Through this training, it is hoped that the capacity and quality of infrastructures at NAMFI will improve so that they can produce good quality workers in the maritime sector. The TOT IMO Model Curve 6.09 training activities will be attended by 20 Namibians. This activity is planned to be held by the Human Resources Development Agency of the Ministry of Transportation in Jakarta in November 2023.
Voice of Indonesia.
Let's begin today in history with an event on October 19, 1937, when Ernest Rutherford, physicist and Nobel Prize in Chemistry, passed away. Ernest Rutherford was a New Zealand-born physicist who collaborated on atomic research with J.J. Thomson at the University of Cambridge, England. Rutherford passed away on October 19, 1937. Rutherford was successful in detecting the atom's nucleus. With Frederick Soddy's support, he suggested that radioactivity came from the decay of atoms. He was the first person to perform atomic visions in a laboratory successfully. In 1908, he received the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for his research on various types of radiation. Let's move on to October 19, 1987, when the tragedy of Bintaro occurred. The 1987 Bintaro train collision, known as the Bintaro 1 tragedy, was a tragic accident involving two trains in the Pondok Betung Bintaro, South Jakarta area on October 19, 1987. Of the history of Indonesian railroads, this accident was the worst. The incident also attracted the world's attention. About 156 people were killed in this accident and more than 300 injured. Results of the investigation show the negligence of Sudimara station officers, who provided a safe signal for trains from the direction of Rangkas Bitung, even though there is no safe statement from Kebayoran station. We entered in history with an event October 19, 2005, when the trial of Saddam Hussein began. Saddam Hussein was president of Iraq from July 16, 1979 to April 9, 2003. His rule ended after Iraq was invaded by the military coalition led by the United States. Saddam Hussein began trial on October 19, 2005. In this case, Saddam and seven other defendants were tried for crimes against humanity in the events after the failed assassination in Dujail in 1982. After being convicted of crimes against humanity, he received a death sentence and was executed on December 30, 2006.
Berlalu, hatimu terlalu cepat berubah.
terbayangkan terjadi. Hanya penyesalan di hati, sanjak hanya ungkapan hati, tak cukup sudah untuk diriku. Oh, aku hancur lantak bagai debu, aku telanjang tanpa kasihmu. Bibirku kering laksana berkarat tempat teduhku.
Listener, you are still with us on Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.voinews.id. For this segment, we would like to give you information about My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
The Ministry Director for Climate Change Mitigation, Yulia Suryanti, said that Indonesia has implemented the Enhanced Nationally Determined Contribution ENDC to reduce greenhouse gas emission with one supporting sector, namely the use of renewable energy. At an event about climate change mitigation broadcasted online in Jakarta on Tuesday, Yulia Suryanti said that the use of renewable energy in 2025 is aimed to increase up to 23% and 31% by 2050. She also explained that there are at least three strategies to achieve the greenhouse gas emission reduction by 31.89% in 2030 without support from other countries. The first one is to reduce carbon emission in the energy sector by using biomass energy. The second one is to use low-emission fuel, such as kerosene conversion into LPG. while the third one is energy efficiency by using electric vehicle. Besides, she added that in the long-term strategy for low carbon and climate resilience by the 2050, the carbon reduction scenario, according to the Paris Agreement, can achieve the highest target if the clean carbon absorption is bigger than the carbon dioxide emission or follow net sink. According to Yulia Suryanti, the follow net sink fulfillment is also necessary to be done along with energy transition. She said the whole scenario aims to achieve carbon neutrality by 2060 or earlier.
Voice of Indonesia.
Nenek moyangku orang pelaut. Yang jaya di lautan.
Those who were victorious at the sea is the first millennium were the Indonesian people, the Malays, none of Chinese who sailed. It was only after South could no longer access the Silk Route by land that they looked for trade routes by sea. That was in the 11th or 12th century. Before that, no, there weren't Chinese who sailed. Aren't you afraid of 8 to 9 meter waves? He said that to me. I said that in Indonesia, I've never seen waves of 9 meters. I want to see it. And he immediately shook hands with me. That's it, sir. That's it.
Kalau istilah pinisi itu sepertinya muncul pada abad ke-19, sekitarnya tahun 1830-an, 40-an.
Period around the 19th century in around 1830 to 40, and it refers to a type of sail that actually comes from Europe, which imitates the international term schooner catch or calf catch, which means a sail that is installed in the direction of the bow of the boat. It seems that these sails were first used in the western regions of Yerkeoido, such as Riau, Bulungan, etc. Until the end of the 19th century, this type of sail was increasingly used towards the east. So the sail also arrived in Sulawesi, and here the sail was changed, which we know now as the Finnish sail.
Jenis layar itu makin banyak digunakan, makin ke arah timur, sehingga akhirnya ide layarnya itu juga tiba di Sulawesi. Dan di sini pun layarnya diubah sedemikian rupa sehingga menjadi yang kita sekarang mengenali sebagai layar penisi.
Indonesian people are challenged to become more resilient in facing life at sea. One of the communities that is able to run a shipping system and build ships is the Bulukumba community. However, the term Finisi became known in the 1950s.
Istilah Finisi itu secara umum baru muncul dalam cetakan, koran, dan sebagainya.
The term Finisi generally only appeared in printing like newspapers and so on in the early 50s of the 20th century. In 1960, the administration of the first Indonesian president Soekarno held a competition for boats to carry copra from Sulawesi to Jakarta. And in the newspaper, a question still arose about what Finisi boat is, because the term Finisi was not yet known to people at that time. Because in the fact, in the records of harbor master and so on, boats like that were still called palari. There was palari solompong, there was palari tongkong. The terms Finisi started being known in the 80s, especially after the Finisi was brought to Vancouver. And there, the boats which were previously called palari were then called Finisi. So the term Finisi, which now we really take pride in, is actually a creation after the Finisi no longer existed.
Terutama setelah ada Finisi Nusantara yang dibawa ke Vancouver, dan di situ, di Singapura misalnya, perahu-perahu yang sebelumnya dinamakan Polari itu mulai dinamakan Finisi. Jadi, istilah Finisi yang sekarang ini begitu dibanggakan, sebenarnya sesuatu ciptaan setelah yang namanya Finisi itu sudah tidak ada lagi. Ini ingatan masyarakat tidak terlalu tepat. Ada cerita bahwa perahu yang seperti itu yang pertama kali dibangun di
People's memory are not very accurate, and there are stories that the first such boat in Ara was in 1900, but no one remembers who built it, for whom, and so on. And until World War II, in the Dutch newspaper and the harbor master reports and so on, all projects like they were recorded as palari. So the use of the word Finisi is something new, something that hasn't been around for too long. But with the motor and Indonesian sailing boats, all of that disappeared in the 70s. This is a memory that people are quite proud of. When Finisi Nusantara was brought to Vancouver and more travel companies from abroad ordered boats like that. The term Spinisi was brought back as a proud memory of boat builders and sailors from the archipelago. The use of the word Spinisi to generalize all types of boats is actually a deflation of Indonesia's boat manufacturing wealth, because in Indonesia there are hundreds of types of boats and they all have their own names.
Istilah Pinisi itu diangkat kembali sebagai suatu ingatan kebanggaan pembuat perahu dan pelayar dari Ponto Bahari itu. Penggunaan kata Pinisi untuk memukul rata semua jenis perahu itu sebenarnya suatu suatu deflasi kekayaan pembuatan perahu Indonesia, karena di Indonesia ada ratusan jenis perahu yang semua punya nama tersendiri.
Spinisi became known worldwide since its first expedition to Vancouver, Canada in 1986, where one of the crew members is still sailing today.
Mungkin dari awal, saya waktu itu yang saya cerita tadi, 85 dari tim.
At that time, from the start, I remember it was in 85 when my team entered Galangan, and then I said I wanted to come to Canada. I hadn't applied it yet. Finally, after a long time, Mr. Felipe, a Frenchman who was watching us as a witness to who accepted the people, I said that you're going home, right? And at that time, many of others didn't come. I went first. So then he said, do you want to come to Canada? And I said, yes, sir. If you still need more people. Then he said, you're not afraid of waves 8 to 9 meter, he said. The same to me. Then I said, in Indonesia, I've never seen 9 meters wave. I wanted to see it. We immediately shook hands, so it was a deal. At that time, I was on the machine and also on the sail. There were also four people from Tanah Biru also come with me. I asked to this Navy man, how many meters are the waves? Oh, this is only 7 meters. How is the 10 meters one like? I said. Relying on two masts and 7 developed sails called Pinisi, the wind has been the main force for Indonesian sailors since the 12th century to sail to their destination. If we sail, we just play with the sails according to the wind. Maybe there will be a change in the wind for several hours, like here yesterday. Sailing without wind for 2 hours could take one day because of the wind. Well, if you use an engine, you can calculate the speed and at what time we will arrive. Well, if we just play with the sails, we cannot predict when we will arrive.
Kapal Pinisi di Banyuwangi ini asalnya dari Arab, dulu kan Mbak, Sulawesi Selatan.
The Spinisi ship was built originally from Arab Bulukumba, South Sulawesi. Starting from the year before independence in 1945, after independence, it already existed before. From generation to generation, we have been able to make this ship without any finished drawings. It has been passed down from our ancestors until now. We do it without any technical knowledge. It is just based on experience and it is recognized throughout the world.
Dan di sini pengalaman saja. Nah, dia kuelen seluruh dunia. Kalau dengan finishnya 1 tahun lebih.
With the Pinisi, it took more than a year, but this time we make it on the Losari Beach. It is the fastest one because in just 2 months and a half has been like this with 2 units with 25 people working. Yes, ironwood, BT wood and teak wood. It only needs 3 types of wood in terms of its strength. In the sea, you can make just any kinds of wood. I used to have finishi made from BT wood, but the scarcity of BT wood forced me to use it only for the ship rooms. Now I cannot do it anymore. The deck is made of teak wood.
Sekarang tidak bisa lagi karena sudah berkurang sisa untuk patah tulang. Decknya ini kayu jati. Minas, papang papangnya disusun, satu-satu.
The shoots, the planks are arranged one by one. Then they go up here. After the body is finished, then the tusks are installed. Once the tusks are installed, the road is installed, the bottom is, then the gutter, then the floor, then the room. The room has all the walls and partitions made. After this, it has been put on the hub. This is lowered, then the mast is made. The mast is then put on the hose rope. The mast rope, then the sail is put on. That's it.
Kali seling, kali tian, nampak belakang, baru pasang layarnya, begitu.
The system and calculation for making finisi sailing ships have been known to people of Arab village Bulukumba since 19th century. However, according to a research conducted by German historian Horst Lippner, only 12 Lemo-Lemo people knew the shipbuilding system. The system is named Tatatalu.
Itu dari rumusnya begini.
That's the formula. So this is how we are ships experts, Wandi Talupi. The important thing is that we know the length, width, and height, that this is 6 meters, the length is 30 meters, the height is 3 meters. They keep installing it, and then it will be right when it hits 6 meters. Indeed, we already have experience in that aspect, without saying that it is balanced. It is already balanced because it is our technique, our experience, so that it is precise up to 6 meters without any writing about so many or so. Each one works, each one is an expert.
Ada satu hal dan itu intinya dari warisan dunianya itu, yaitu.
There is one thing that is essence of world heritage, namely what we can call a formula for making it. Many people say that boats are made without drawings and so on, and that is actually not true. There is a formula that is not made into a drawing, but made into various sizes which are recorded above the gorge. There are various bangli that are used with signs that determine the measurements, for example, the location of the pegs in the hull, the length of the planks, the location of the frame, and so on. Those who will still inherit this knowledge today are the descendants of the Lemo-Lemo people. It seems to have a formula called Tatatalu, which can produce boats up to 14 meter long. PLM boats, or whatever boats were called pinisi in the 70s, were much bigger. So there is an impression that the Arab people at some point in 1930s to 1950s created a new manufacturing formula called Tata Apa, which could produce larger boats.
Jadi ada kesan bahwa orang Arab pada suatu saat tahun 1930-an sampai 50-an menciptakan satu rumus pembuatan yang baru yang dinamakan Tata Apa yang bisa menghasilkan perahu yang lebih besar. Membangun suatu perahu itu adalah suatu hal yang sangat-sangat rumit. Secara populer, perahu layar itu diakui sebagai
building a boat is very, very complicated things. Popularly, the sailboat is recognized as the most complicated human creation that has existed before the Industrial Revolution in the 18th century. This means that throughout human history, nothing more complicated has been built than a sailboat. If we compare the parts of number of objects in this boat, whatever there is, as far as I know, is 100 times more than a cell phone. And they all have to function the same as cell phone. If you install one small part wrongly. The cell phone won't work. It's the same as if boat is installed incorrectly. One small part of the boat will not sail. And there is another point there. Boat is not something rectangular, but it created through a curve. The curve must be harmonious. If the curve is crooked, the boat will not sail. Maybe someone remembers in high school we are taught how to calculate the curve f from x, which is the most complicated, right? Maybe those who have gone through it have all said, well, this is very difficult, but the boat can only function if the curve is harmonious. The curve can be calculated in that way. So the knowledge to create curves has been going on in the archipelago for 1,000 years. And the way of conceptualizing curves is not much different from shipwrecks from the 10th century to boats built in the mid-20th century. These things are very complicated, so they are not for public consumption because they are too complicated. But in order to deepen them and make them something to be proud of, things like that should be made more public, put forward more to the general public so that they are not reduced to only Pinisi.
Cara mengkonsepkan kurva-kurva itu tidak jauh berbeda dari kapal-kapal karam yang dari abad ke-10 dengan perahu-perahu yang dibangun pada pertengahan abad ke-20. Hal-hal itu amat-amat rumit, sehingga bukan menjadi ini baru konsumsi halaya kerana, wah, memang terlalu rumit. Tetapi untuk apa ya? Memperdalamnya dan menjadikannya sesuatu yang bisa dibanggakan. Hal-hal seperti itu semestinya memang lebih diumumkan, lebih dikedepankan kepada hal-hal ramai, supaya itu tidak direduksi atas ini si doa.
Yeah. Sebuah tembang pilihan. Semoga bisa meredam segala kerinduan.
From Jakarta, here is the Voice of Indonesia with English program.
VOI listener, today's music corner presents a song from East Nusa Tenggara entitled Gemu Famire. Gemu Famire was composed by Nyong Franco in 2011. This song was originally composed as a welcome song for guests who come to Maumere, East Nusa Tenggara. Besides being a song, Gemu Famire is also known as a dance like Poco Poco dance from North Sulawesi. Nyong Franco incorporates elements of gong to bring out the local wisdom of culture. The lyrics of the song mention Maumere as a city full of songs. The chorus of the song Gemu Famire also invites the listeners to dance and spin around. Well, listener, let's dance with the song Gemu Famire by Nyong Franco. Enjoy!
Roposai.